This is The Conversation. It's a podcast that goes behind the scenes of itself, in this case. This is episode 258, the meta episode, also known as The Search for a Co-host Begins. I'm Michael Shaw. Welcome to the show, and happy 2020, you guys. My favorite year so far as numbers, because who doesn't love 2020 vision? And my favorite candidate, in case you haven't heard, Hindsight 2020. So, as I mentioned last episode, I am in the search for a co-host. Now, I recognize that it's going to be very challenging to find the right fit for a co-host. It may not even happen, honestly. That is a possibility, but it gave me a great reason to chat with a handful of people who have helped out this show, and I am very excited to give you the chance to hear from current, and in one case, former producers Amanda Roth, Chris Ford, Andy Davis, Adam Vale, and Megan Bickle. And leading off will be multiple-time co-host Deb Cloudman. So you have that to come in just a bit. The website for this show is theconversationpod.com. Go and see their shining faces there, all of these producers. Probably even an artwork by one of them as well. So please go to theconversationpod.com to check all that out. And quickly, before we jump in, I want to give a big thank you to a listener who made a very generous donation via Venmo to me right before the end of the year and simply said, been meaning to do this for a while. Did not request any shout out, but I wanted to give this person an anonymous thank you very much. It's generosity like that and support like that that really does help the show keep going. So I will leave it at that for now. Thank you again to that person. Thank you guys for being here. And let's go talk to Deb and then all of the producers of The Conversation right now. I'll talk to you more on the back end. How many times, by your recollection, did you co-host with me? Or have you co-hosted with me?
Oh, gosh. I want to say, 10? Is that right?
Sounds about right.
Somewhere in that neighborhood?
Sounds about right to me. What were your thoughts about this co-host idea that I proposed via email?
Oh, I think it's so good. I think it's really, really great. I always think it's nice when you have just a third person who is consistently used to the dynamic and can kind of shift things more easily in a conversation if it's needed or add a little something. I also loved your idea of, you know, having a consistent conversation with the co-host and not necessarily needing to have a guest every time, but instead kind of choose a subject matter.
Right. So here's the follow-up question to that.
Yeah.
Do you have anybody in mind that you would like to propose?
In mind, in my brain, who would be good?
Sure.
Shit.
Well, let's just say while you're thinking about it, okay. Let's just say, so John Kincaid, who we mutually know a good probably 6 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. I was talking to him and I don't know if I was saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for people to co-host with me. It might have been as simple as that, but he recommended you. And then next thing you know, there we went. So I just thought I would mention that to give you a little time to think about your answer.
Well, here's a question. Here's a question to go back at you. Do you have a sense of what kind of work you want this person to be doing in the world, especially if you're going to be kind of having consistent conversations and not always having a guest?
Right.
Do you imagine it, you know, you are an artist, and therefore do you think you imagine it as another artist, or do you imagine somebody who is, you know, functioning differently, either a writer or a curator or a gallerist or et cetera, et cetera?
I think this is probably going to sound bad in one way or another, whether selfish or superficial or what have you, but I think the highest priority is probably somebody that's got a little bit of a following already.
That makes sense.
I think beyond that, I don't have that much concern about what category.
Okay, here's another question. Mm-hmm. I was imagining that you specifically wanted somebody who was in LA so that you could do this in person versus, you know, over the phone and at a distance. Is that probably true?
I think there's a, you know, I think that would be ideal. I don't think it's absolutely necessary, but I do think it would be ideal. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because one of the people who jumped in my head, who I think has a really interesting perspective from a number of different directions, is Amber Kelly, but she is not in LA. She's half of the team who does, you know, Spring Break Art Show and is an artist, but she's very much a, she's an organizer in our world and super, super smart and has a lot of different kinds of experience that I think would come into play really interestingly. So now I want to think if there's somebody who has a similar feeling and a similar following who is actually based here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my bias would be towards, you know, having a female voice on with you, because I think it's nice to have that in the mix as well. But
Okay. I think I'm already really impressed that you actually came up with a specific person. So I want to give you kudos for that. I haven't heard of that Amber. So I think that's intriguing. And does she already have a platform that she speaks on, or is it just strictly the art world stuff she does?
That's the thing, is that it's mostly, you know, she does now. They did start an outpost in LA. Mm. But I think last year was the first year sort of when Freeze started that they did outpost in LA. But, you know, it started very organically sort of there. She and her partner, Andrew Gorey, who is, you know, her partner in life and also business. And I also like the idea of somebody who people really respect their opinion and you know, their involvement, but who is not necessarily in strictly confined to one particular branch of the art world in a elitist sort of a way, you know, because there are always a number of different art worlds in any one place that are overlapping each other, and a lot of people who think that their version of it is the only one. And I think that Amber, or somebody who straddles a number of different kinds of communities and a number of different ways of working, would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think another priority that I would add to that earlier one is that the other person can help us provide a minimum level of entertainment, because I think that's something that I've always wanted and struggled to find, both with other people, but also very much on my own. You know, it really feels so dependent on the guest as to whether there's room for fun and entertainment. And with a co-host, I think that could be much more of a regular thing.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'll keep thinking about it. I mean, thinking of her is a helpful beginning in the sense that she gives me a little bit of a roadmap for the type of person that I think would be really interesting for you. And definitely, I think, you know, artists who are also doing something else to really make things happen, both for themselves and for their community, is always great, because, you know, people who have that kind of hustle to be out there and trying to add, you know, extra layers to the conversation rather than just kind of trying to win the landscape as it's presented to them.
Right.
If that makes
any
sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I will definitely keep thinking.
So you and I, you know, in email we talked about having this call, and we also briefly mentioned you could be sort of a test case or just a preliminary, you know, co-host until that person is found. So if we're to do that, what do you envision us talking about? Or do you feel like it would be something that would be very much in the moment, you know, where we would just go off of whatever was going on that particular day?
I mean, I think it could be a sort of delicious combination of both of those things. I find myself right now really interested in talking about what's happening in LA in this shift even more than we've seen before towards additional money and patronage being here, and how that sort of changing the landscape and the feeling of working in the arts in LA. And yeah, that's something I'm definitely interested in, and something I know that you touch on with guests often, but I think could be a place to start. And then,
okay.
Yeah. How about you? What are you thinking in terms of conversations?
Well, you know, I think it would be easy for me to just sort of ask you a ton of questions, you know, as a gallerist, like what, how are things going, and, you know, and tell me stories and stuff like that. But I think it would be good to reconcile that angle with it being more of a shared kind of thing rather than, all right, I'm going to go and hit you with a bunch of stuff. Now you hit me with a bunch of stuff, you know? So it's like, I mean, my favorite co-hosts in my, one of my favorite podcasts, which is a basically a comedy-based podcast. They just kind of talk. I mean, they literally at the beginning of the show, they have this segment called it's Get to Know Us. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what's been going on with you? What's been going on with you? You know, and then they do that with the guests, and that, so they spend like a good half hour or more just going around doing that.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that, and I think it's something that we're all really hungry for, because the more and more we're confronted with everybody's hyper-idealized digital versions of themselves and doing, you know, extreme things and also very casual things, it's just such a relief to hear people honestly say with their voices what's going on with them in their world.
Right.
So I love that idea.
Great. My sense, one last thing that I'll say about this search is that I think it's definitely going to rely on a lot of proactivity. Like you're recommending this woman for starters. I don't think they're going to be people banging down the door going, oh, I have the perfect person for you. And then they are perfect.
Right.
So But anyway, that said,
it'll be a process for sure.
So we need to start thinking about, all right, well, in the meantime, Deb and I are going to have a little, test case co-hosting situation, and that's going to be happening.
I know how much you love dealing with my schedule, and so
and your artists do too, probably, right?
yep, it's their favorite. So I'll definitely throw some dirt dates your way, but I think we should get started soon.
All right, it'll be beautiful.
Awesome. Yay.
Next, I spoke with Amanda Roth. She is a Los Angeles-based educator and art historian. Here we go. Do you know how long you've been doing the producing, booking work that you've been doing now?
I think I started working on this type of stuff around September, maybe. So just for a couple months.
Well, virtually a season.
Yeah, a season, I guess, yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about, I'm kind of talking to people about this co-host idea. What was your initial reaction to it?
I think that sounds like a cool idea, because I imagine that you could talk about a bunch of different things, like some of the news stories you do at the end of the episodes, like chat about some of those topics more, because I always enjoy those extra segments at the end of the episodes, too.
Oh, that's good to know. There's so rarely feedback on those things that it's hard to know how those things are doing, because you kind of wonder if people are hanging on, you know, past the actual interview segment. Well, so I have a couple of basic questions for you. One is, are there any particular podcasts that you listen to that are co-host based or just, you know, individual based that you, you know, like for one reason or another better than another?
There's a couple of other podcasts that I listen to. There's like a relationship podcast that I listen to. That's like a advice relationship one called Dear Sugars, and that has two co-hosts. And I really like it because they can like kind of talk with each other, and they have different opinions about things often, but sometimes the same. But I think that extra layer of dialogue is pretty interesting. So I usually like it when there's more than one host, and you kind of get a sense of the different personalities and like the different types of questions people are inclined to ask.
Yeah. And the other question I wanted to ask you is, Have you thought of anybody that you think might be a good candidate, or would you be able to think of anybody? Not that I'm depending on you, but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think. I don't know. The short answer is I don't have any ideas yet, but
okay.
I would definitely think about it. Do you have an idea of the type of person you would want to bring onto the show to be a co-host?
That's a very good question, and maybe this will help you think of people. But I was just talking to Deb Cloudman a little earlier, who has mm-hmm. been my co-host about 10 times. She decided, you know, or she recalled that it was about that many times. In talking to her, I realized that probably the top priority would be somebody that's entertaining, fun mm-hmm. to talk to, and we would provide an entertaining platform, you know, and dynamic more than anything else. Like she was saying, you know, you're an artist. Would you want another artist, or would you want a gallerist, a writer? And I thought, well, I'd actually be open to any of those things as long as we have fun, you know, that it's an entertaining dynamic, because I think the way that I do it individually, it really depends so much on the guest as to what the tone's going to be. You know, if they have a sense of humor, then it's going to be a funnier, more entertaining episode. And if they're really serious, there's only so much I can do to change that around. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to jump on with me. And did you have anything else that you wanted to say about, I mean, here's another question for you. How do you think this is going to affect potentially your process of, you know, talking to potential guests? You think you'll see it through a different lens, maybe?
Maybe. I think especially having the other host having a little bit of other work to reference would be good, because they usually recommend potential guests to, like, you know, listen to a couple episodes if they're not familiar with the podcast, to get a sense of what it's like to, you know, have a conversation with you and, you know, the kind of like ways that the conversation flows and everything. So I think it'd be good if there was, you know, kind of like a resource to help them get familiar with the other person as well if they're not sure about it. But I don't know. I think I think having a couple people chatting together is a nice dynamic sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have it kind of takeaways do you have, if any, come to mind from the people that you've spoken with so far? You've probably spoken with a good 20 people, maybe something like that. 20 candidates. Is that about right?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I've really been enjoying it. It's really been super interesting hearing about everybody's projects and stuff. And I've really been enjoying, especially like listening to episodes of people that I've talked with before we recorded, or you recorded and everything, to see like what is similar things that we talked about and what are like totally different things that came up during your guys' longer conversation too. So it's really fun. A lot of the topics are expanded, and then there's a whole different material and sides to things too that didn't even come up when we were chatting. So
right.
I think it's been really cool.
Good, yeah. Good. Well, thanks for doing it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've loved it.
That's great. Okay, cool. Then I spoke with Chris Ford. He is an artist. He's also a preparator at the Broad Museum, and he was a producer of the show, as you will hear. Here we go. This is a new search, kind of with a real intention to it. What are your thoughts about it?
Oh, I think it's a good idea. I mean, it's always good to have another voice in there to definitely take pressure off of the host, somebody to chime in with another question, another observation, you know? Good way to get some crosstalk going and some, you know, banter.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any particular podcasts that you listen to that are, you think, a good model?
We can go Chapo Trap House.
Chapo Trap House. I'm not familiar with that one. Sounds intriguing.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Definitely get on that bandwagon.
Okay. Okay. So you were sort of producer on board with the show for like a year and a half, 2 years, something. How long do you think it was roughly?
I want to say about a year to a year and a half.
Okay. And when was that?
Yeah.
How long ago was that now?
So that was, I think I started on like early 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely before Trump went into
office. Yeah. That sounds right.
Mm-hmm. And then for a little while, in the past the first year and before I started work, I went back to school in the fall of 2017.
Okay. I think. Right. So you were helping us out around 2016, roughly, maybe late 2015, possibly.
Yeah. The best, the highlight of the show, the best episodes ever. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then I guess as you're processing this co-host thing a little bit more, are there any particular memories you have either from the recording that you were in on particularly, or other aspects of being involved, like, you know, booking people or anything else that comes to the surface you?
It was always kind of fun to talk to the people beforehand, to screen them, see how, also try, a little creepy maybe, try to get into your head to try to think of what would Michael find interesting here?
Yeah, right.
What thread would Michael try to chase down in this part, mm-hmm. as opposed to what I'd be interested in, try to like act as a mediator between them and you, and like she's like maybe try to stir you to maybe getting them on the show, and then maybe discouraging you from putting them on the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought that was the very interesting part of the job, I thought. And it was also like it's always interesting to see how people break into whatever part of the art world they're in.
Mm-hmm,
like how
mm-hmm.
they managed to wedge a foot in the door mm-hmm. somewhere. That's always interesting to me.
What I'm wondering about regarding what you said is if you were the host yourself, you mentioned sort of mediating between what you think I would want to know and what you actually wanted to know. What would you want to know if there was no other person involved? What's the difference between what you wanted to know and what I wanted to know, do you think?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. Yeah. Like I know, for instance, you, I think, and I can kind of see the reason for this. Why is like, maybe you don't talk so much about with an artist, you don't so much talk about the work itself.
Right.
And for me, I would probably ask questions to see, try to make connections between the work and the life of the person, Well, here's something from my life. So, Helena and I are having a baby, and I want to know how that affects artists.
Mazel tov.
Once they become thank you very much. So once they become parents, how does it affect the work?
Yeah.
Beyond I don't have any time to do anything. I'm aware of that, but what about does the content change? Does it change at all?
Yeah.
Or do you go? Do you compartmentalize?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole this wonky thing. I like to use the term wonky because it's sort of an umbrella term that describes sort of getting into the weeds, which is something that can be very satisfying and intellectually stimulating and academically rigorous for those small number of people who care, right? But
right.
And I don't know, how many other art podcasts do you listen to? I mean, what do you find happens with other art podcasts?
I got to tell you, I don't listen to it.
Good answer.
Many anymore. Yeah, and some of them, so I'm blanking on the name, but it was Patty Johnson and
William Pajida.
William Pajida's podcast, and which I found kind of entertaining, and like interesting because they, and they would, you know, they review shows and they did, but it came out so infrequently, and then now I believe it's just completely stopped. And you know, so the one thing I felt like I couldn't figure out their rhythm, whatever chemistry they had together, and it was, so I don't know, it was so, and it, but that was one I was listening to, and then it just stopped.
Right.
There's a few others. I don't want to name any names, but I think you and I both know. But there's some rather well-founded ones that actually kind of do that thing where they talk about the work, and it's a very dry thing. It just seems like somebody will be giving an artist talk, or if the curator, they'll be giving their spiel on their current show at something, which is, I don't know, that's, I mean, I guess that's interesting to some people. It's not so much to me. I've sat through so many of those lectures, and
right,
you know, a person that taught at an, you know, I went to art school, taught at art schools. Now I work in museums, and you know, I've, you know.
Speaking of working at the museum, you work at the Broad. Do you ever go to the talks that they have, or are you like, I need to get home?
Yeah. But I do tend to go, and you know, it's I don't know about you, but it's always a revelation when somebody is smart and like an entertaining speaker. You know, it's like a special thing. Like, so they make, you know, they make interesting, compelling work. Or they've done something, maybe just, let's take it out of the artist talk thing, but, and they have a good story, and they seem like a real human, you know, like you can imagine this person sitting at a kitchen table and talking with friends or something like that. And yeah. So that I enjoy, but you know, that's few and far between.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. For me, it's pretty much the same, although I would just clarify a bit by saying, they are smart and they have a sense of humor. That's seems to be pretty hard to find.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Co-sign that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how you do not have a sense of humor in the art world, but so many people manage without.
Oh yeah. Sure. Well, but that goes back to what I'm looking for, I think, in a co-host, you know, is somebody who is, well, I think three things, essentially. Obviously more if you want to really get into it, but smart, whatever that means, sense of humor, and also they already maybe have some traction or a platform of their own. You know, I think
that's the challenge.
So now that you know what the requirements are, you can start meditating on some ideas, right? Perhaps?
Sure, I can.
Okay.
I can.
Okay, yeah. Good.
I mean,
would you be open to working in a commercial gallery?
Sure.
Okay. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Ford. Next, I spoke to Andy Davis, longtime producer of the show. You've heard his name a lot. He is an artist. He does residencies all over the place and is, in fact, on one now, as you will hear.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, long time, Andy Davis. How's it going?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah,
it really has been a while.
I know. What was your reaction to the idea?
Well, I mean, I'm curious about how it would be structured, because when you were saying co-host, I mean, different models were popping into my head. Like, if co-hosting meant actually like having this, like that you and the co-host would be speaking with the guest at the same time, or if it would be like you would alternate episodes or something, was another model that occurred to me.
Right.
I mean, you know, and all that aside, like I think that the co-host idea seems valid for sure, and I guess the real challenge is finding the right person, because I mean, one of the things that's working on the show is that you have a lot of experience with the conversations, and you know, I was talking to my sister about it earlier today and just remarking that it's like a a skill that requires like holding a lot of different threads at the same time. Like you need to be able to keep track of the conversation, keep track of the question, and kind of navigate with the conversant to bring the conversation back to where you started.
Right.
And I just think that's a skill that would have a pretty steep learning curve, I guess.
That's right. That's absolutely right. In fact, that's something that I mentioned to Deb. And to answer your question or your sort of observation of the types of situations that a co-host would be implemented, I mean, I think what you're talking about with the steep learning curve is you're talking about just adding on another co-host who would be doing the same thing, and it would be the same thing with two people. But I'm wondering if it would be maybe a reboot situation, this is one of the things that I didn't mention, that the guy who was making this recommendation of this co-host idea, he said it would be a way to take pressure off having guests, you know, like all the time. So it could be this model where myself and this co-host, in theory, just talk about stuff, you know,
right,
in a conversation, and you know, we don't have to have a guest. As I was telling Deb, one of my favorite podcasts is this. It's a comedy podcast, but it's these two guys who talk about them, you know, what's going on with them. They usually have a guest. It's like 90% of the time they do have a guest, but you know, they go around the table, talk about what's been going on with them. But it's clearly deeply rooted in both familiarity and connection, you know, with the two co-hosts, but also
right,
having a good time, you know, like enjoying the conversation. And one of the problems with interviewing people, especially people I don't know, which is like 95% of the time, is that there's a curve of getting to know each other, you know, and familiarity and all of that. And, you know, and that doesn't leave a lot of room for having a good time, unless you just have like somebody like Laura, who is clearly easy to talk to, has a good sense of humor, you know, is ready to make fun of themselves, you know, and so on. Most
right,
artists and art world people don't have that kind of sense of humor. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, now that you mention it, most of the, I think the other art podcasts that I know of, and I actually don't really listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think you're the only one that I know that isn't a co-host situation. Because like that at sports is a big, you know, they have a whole room full of people there.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it's hard to track.
Right.
And then there's another one that I've seen recently with their gay, like kind of big name art people. I can't even remember what it's called, but it's a co-host situation too. So, I mean, this might be a message to us about, I mean, not that we're trying to be on trend or something, but that it might be really useful for you. But I mean, I guess what happened so that it stopped? That you stopped co-hosting, you know, back in a few years ago when you were doing that?
Well, it was just logistically really difficult. I mean, the first idea was the conversation three-way, where it would be myself and two
right,
other people that would alternate. And there were only five of those. And it turned out to be a lot more work than just a regular episode, because it wasn't just finding two other people. It was finding two other people and then sort of trying to come up with an itinerary or, you know, an agenda of things we were going to talk about. Because I,
right,
again, I didn't have a lot of familiarity with these other people for the most part, with one, you know, with like a couple exceptions. And so we needed to come up with stuff. In one case, actually, one of them, it was just Aaron Morse and I talked with Philip Martin, the gallerist, and that was more like a two-on-one interview rather than a three-way. But then with
right,
Deb Cloudman, who is also going to be on this episode, she figured we did about 10 together. And that was just a logistical thing. You know, she doesn't have the availability to do it on a regular basis. So that's really why none of those situations worked out. So that's why this is more of a, you know, now that there's a little more time and experience and hopefully recognition, as it were, under the belt of the show, you know, it's a more of a intentional attempt to find that one person for the long term. And I worry that that it's going to be hard. I'm somebody who I'm working with on Instagram / social media is saying that I should do a video, you know, that I can post, and that will be a way to reach a lot more people, which may or may not be true. But I just, as I told Deb, it's going to require a lot of proactivity. Like, you know, I can't just do this episode and expect that people are going to be banging down the door saying, oh yeah, I got it. I've got 10 names for you to consider.
Right. And what is your, I mean, what are you thinking in terms of the search process? Like, I mean, even once you have names, like, are you interviewing people? Or are you trying to get, like I said, I guess there's a lot of information you need to gather before finding the right person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's maybe where you could come in potentially, because one of the things I was going to ask you is, if there's a co-host, what would that mean for you vetting episodes? You know, would it be as relevant to vet episodes when you have sort of a more stable and predictable presence, you know, involved? And then you also just had mentioned about potentially screening again, which you haven't done in a while. And I thought, oh, well, maybe you could screen people for being co-hosts. But of course, we would have to, it would be a lot, it's going to be a lot harder to come up with candidates than just guests to the show. So, but, you know, I think there are two ways of doing it, right? One is we can recognize people that seem like they would be a good fit and reach out to them, you know? So it's the invitation model. And then the other one is the solicitation model, where people come to us and say, you know, I think I would be a great co-host, you know, and you could screen either one of those types of people, I suppose.
Yeah.
You have any ideas of people, by the way, all that said?
Well, I mean, my mind started going through former guests. And I mean, I've kind of felt like, I don't know, it would be worth checking again. Cassie Thornton popped into my head as like someone who was pretty witty on the show. And
yeah.
You too had like a, you know, you were able to talk to her about your artwork and kind of go have like a back and forth that I don't often hear with the guests. That was kind of like more taking your own work into account. So anyway, she popped into my head. And then if I looked through our episodes again, I would probably, names would start jumping out at me.
Okay.
But that, I think former guests who had a good rapport would be one way to start. And then I guess it would be a matter of like figuring out what kind of person we're looking for. Like, is this also an artist or an arts administrator or like a curator or someone who doesn't have any experience with the art world or being an artist and is just interested from the outside? And what kind of dynamic are you searching for with this person?
Well, as I told Deb, cause she kind of asked me a version of that same question, I said, you know, this may be really kind of weirdly selfish or self-serving, but I kind of don't care what they do so much as that they already have some kind of platform or traction or recognition. I think it's a combination of that and just how entertaining / you know, good a conversationalist they are, really. I mean, those are kind of the big check marks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's useful to know in terms of her orientation.
And you've been around quite a bit. I mean, you know, between New York and Philadelphia and, you know, the West Coast and other various residencies you've done. I mean, not that these are the best, like residencies are the best location to find podcast hosts, but just through right. your travels, you know, I would imagine that even if you don't necessarily think of a particular person that you think would be a great candidate, it seems yeah. like it would put you in proximity to some ideas of people, perhaps. Maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know, a lot of names are kind of jumping out. I can just put together, like, bring, like, kind of spin the wheels.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this isn't a
right.
Yeah, just to be clear, this isn't a test to see who you can come up with on the spot. This is both the process of me having a conversation with you about this new prospect of, you know, of rebooting the show, and also a chance for listeners to learn a little bit about you as well. So, one of the things also that I've been asking people is how would it affect what you've been doing? Like, so you went from screening people, which you were doing for quite a while, to vetting the episodes, you know, to like make edit cuts. And
right.
How do you feel about that arc and transition? And what would be your, I mean, first of all, I can't tell you how grateful I am for all the work that you've done and are doing for the show. It's just, it's been absolutely invaluable. So I hope you know that. But second of all, you. What would be your sort of ideal role now/ going forward, do you feel like?
Well, my view on it is, like, I felt like maybe I was doing the most valuable work when I was reaching out to people and doing the screening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like I kind of organically transition to editing because it's just really, that's a kind of difficult task just because of the scheduling.
Yeah.
Like that was my biggest challenge.
Yeah, right.
So I think maybe with a co-host, I think it'll still be important to be pretty rigorous about cutting and make the episode kind of like smooth and like keep the pace up and the energy alive, because one thing I'm imagining with the element of a third person and someone that you start to know well
mm-hmm.
is that, and this is kind of my criticism of some podcasts where the rapport between the co-host is so like intimate and unspoken, and they just haven't, they're totally vibing and they start laughing a lot together and they're having a great time, and then I'm listening and I'm like, I don't know what are you two doing? All right, you're clearly having a good time. I don't know what's going on. You're just laughing. And I'm not in on the joke, and I'm resentful of you too. So
right.
I'm gonna stop listening.
Yeah.
And then I stop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I feel like having an editor who can bring the show back to its kind of arc or its root.
Yeah, that sounds
story
good.
Story is important.
Right. Yeah, that show that I mentioned earlier, that's where the two co-hosts, you know, that's the comedy podcast, you do get to laugh along with them, at least if it's your type of sense of humor, which it often is for me.
Right.
And they're professionals. One of them, at least, is a total professional. So you're really getting good product and delivery. I think the model you're talking about is the amateur model, which is such a... it's one of the sort of negative stereotypes of amateur podcasting, you know, is that you listen to these two people in a basement, you know, with a microphone, thinking that they're making interesting radio when it's completely
right.
self-indulgent. So, and I think we could definitely get into that territory, you know, if we're not careful, you know. I think that's good. But I think that vetting of that you're talking about, once we do have somebody in place, and in the meantime, helping me sort of recruit, brainstorm and recruit, I think that would be incredibly valuable. We will add this as sort of a final thing. Why don't you just talk briefly about what you're going to be putting on or putting together in Galveston coming up shortly?
Yeah, great. Well, I'm I'm going there to be a kind of producer, amateur theater producer of an operetta, which is like a short comedic opera. And this is based on a kind of fable that occurred to me a few years ago about an anthropomorphic seaweed that, so the story is that there's the seaweed waving at the bottom of the sea, and then one of them is torn from its holdfast and during a storm and tossed about the ocean, and then it is washed up on shore, and a sun deity, solar being, descends onto the beach, and as it approaches the seaweed, it begins to feel desire and starts to transform into a kind of, anthropomorphize into this humanoid shape.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun reaches down and the desire is building, the music swelling, and then the seaweed is picked up by the sun and thrown back into the sea. That's the story arc. And I'm going and working with musicians and kind of amateur dancers, or untrained, I should say, and trying to put on as big of a production as I can. And I'll build a stage in the gallery and do my own little Gesamtkunstwerk.
Right.
And see, see where the chips fall. I'm just trying to be as open as possible to what we can accomplish or what limitations provide in terms of the form. And there's a lot of variables, and it's feeling pretty, it's floating right now, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, it sounds like a great opportunity.
So yeah, I'll check in after the whole thing comes together. And the opening is March 7th.
Okay.
We have a couple of months.
Great. Well, good luck, Andy.
I
hope it's definitely going to be an adventure, if nothing else. And so enjoy.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael. And we'll get this co-host idea rolling.
Adam Vail is an art educator and art historian, and has been a great addition to the team as a consultant, and in fact helped me come up with the ultimate edit for this particular episode. How's that for meta? Here we go. Now, you've been doing many things, but you sort of initially we agreed that you would kind of consult for the conversation. And so what better time to consult than to take on this new proposal, this new potential angle of having a co-host? What was your first reaction to that, and maybe what, if any, thoughts have you had since that initial suggestion?
Sure. No, I think it's a fantastic idea. In sort of the grand scheme of things, whether we're discussing contemporary art or some other far-flung topic, I think, multiple perspectives, different angles on any one subject area, that can only be a good thing. So when we include more voices in the conversation, whether that's, whomever, that is ultimately, I think that's going to repay the podcast, absolutely.
Okay, great. And what kind of dynamic do you envision? When I think we talked about this very briefly before, and you had mentioned some typical, I don't think you got specific, but I think you mentioned some typical co-hosting type podcast situations.
Sure. No, I think one of the things I mentioned previously, there's different ways, pardon the expression, to skin the cat, which, I hate that expression, by the way. It's being an animal lover. But in any event, I think, to approach it as, sort of co-equals, I think is one approach, and I think that could serve the podcast well. Someone with a strong and powerful voice, that could add to and complement your efforts, is certainly, one potential route. But one thing I was thinking about as well is a person serving a role more of an ancillary capacity, you know, whereas you would hold down the fort as you have been, you know, driving and leading, you know, each episode, each conversation. And this person serve more of a minor role, a supplementary role, if you will.
Okay.
You know, I was listening recently to the, what's it called, the Armchair Expert. I don't know if you know that. It's not art related. It's sort of a guilty pleasure. It's Dax Shepard's podcast.
Oh, I've certainly heard about it. It's like it's one of the. It's I don't know if it's one of the most popular, but I think it's like a million downloads per episode in that neighborhood.
It's pretty popular.
Yeah.
And, you know, here and there, it's certainly sucked me into it. And you know, I think one of the strongest elements of that podcast is Dax's strong voice, but also one that's complemented by sort of intermittent bursts of clarity, of sort of insight by his co-host.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one model that could be considered.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it suits the conversation ideally, but it's certainly something to consider.
Yeah, I think it could. I think it definitely could. That would seems like it would probably be an art news, an art journalist maybe type person, or it could be a more of a contemporary art history type person, although that seems a little less likely because they tend to be more academic, which I don't think is the direction that we would ultimately be going in. All that said, so I've been talking to a few people, as I think you've been aware, and going all the way back to the first chat that I had with Deb Cloudman, we talked about the fact that it's not going to be like people are going to be banging down the door, you know, so we have to be pretty proactive.
I don't know. I wouldn't be for sure.
Well, I hope you're right.
I think this is an ascendant podcast, and I think you might be surprised.
Okay. Well, I would love to be surprised. That said, I think that was my preface or lead up to, do you have any particular proposals yet? Are you still sort of thinking on it?
I'm in the deliberation stage.
Okay.
Still.
Fair enough.
I've not narrowed the process down to any one particular. But I think there's someone out there, and I think there's somebody that's not just going to fill the role, but fill it credibly.
Wow, that's great.
But that's something we'll have to sort of peel that onion a bit further, I think, in the coming days.
Okay. Sounds good. I don't know if we have too much more for now to dig into that, but so this is kind of, I see this as kind of the meta conversation episode, you know, where it's like thinking about the process and the structure of the show, and also talking with several people who are sort of behind it or, you know, informing it, having an impact on it directly by helping with it. And I actually envision you, I don't know if I alluded to this before, but vetting, you know, this edit that will come together at some point, which seems even more meta. So how do you feel about the prospect of vetting, you know, my edit of our conversation right now?
Yeah, that's incredibly meta.
Yeah.
Editing a conversation of myself, having a conversation with you, I think it's, that's certainly something I would welcome with open arms. With all manner of bias aside,
right.
I'd be happy to do it.
Okay, excellent. I appreciate that. Is there anything that you want listeners to know about you, or anything you want to tell them, either and or?
Well, you know, just a few seconds ago, you made mention that you were expressly not looking for an academic type. So I'm gonna do my best not to take offense at that. I've been an academic, you know, myself for the last, 15, 20 years or so.
Right.
I'm just joking.
Right.
But yeah, that's of course my background. I think I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I think there are, you know, as a segment of the art world, I think there are probably some better choices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like you probably on a regular basis are reconciling your own academic roots and tendencies with, you know, the vernacular. You know, you mentioned this Dax Shepard show, which sounds like it's got both, but it's clearly, I would imagine, I've never listened to it myself, it's clearly very populist in some ways, right?
It is. It's definitely sort of more for popular consumption, but, you know, I think there's some, there's a lot of poignancy to the conversations he has, and I've listened to it, you know, on and off, you know, not habitually, but you know, mm-hmm. I think there's a great deal of poignancy to some of the topics he addresses, and to some of the guests he hosts, you know, from, you know, contemporary developments in sort of social and bioengineering to, you know, avant-garde filmmaking and sort of creative expression, to, sort of groundbreaking sort of medical technology. I think there's something in there that, you know, bears a great deal of relevance, sort of on, you know, anyone's day-to-day life or sort of day-to-day interest, which I think, you know, spans, you know, listenerships, you know, quite easily. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and you know, there's the intersections between, you know, what an arts interested audience might enjoy and what, say, he brings to the table from one week to the next. You know, I think there's more similarity there than difference.
Mm. Well, I appreciate all of your inputs and insights and vetting as well. Mm-hmm. And you'll be getting to hear some version of this, so brace yourself.
Okay, I will indeed. Gird my loins. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks so much. Have a good one. Take care, Adam.
Yep. Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Last but not least, I spoke to Megan Bickle. She is an artist and an MFA candidate at University of Louisville. And you have heard her name a lot because she helps on the Weisslinks, a.k.a. Old News. Megan, you've been doing kind of a range of things. Most recently, you've been perusing the Old News, a.k.a. Weisslinks, for clips. So, as you know, I've been talking to some people about finding a co-host. And
right.
I'd be interested to know what your thought about that is, or thoughts.
I mean, I think it's a great idea if you feel like it would benefit you personally and it would aid in strengthening the show, then I say definitely go for it. I think it would also give you the, I don't know if you have people in mind already, or if you're trying to keep them physically regional so that you could record in the same location, for example, or if you're trying to, I guess it could be an opportunity for you to broaden the scope and introduce another person to the show that's perhaps like outside of LA or mm-hmm. maybe like a different regional perspective, which might be interesting. I don't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, no, I mean,
as far as what type of host you're looking for.
Right. Well, let me just quickly, but so you can sort of weigh this into your thinking. I think there are pros and cons to both. The, you know, obviously the pro of having somebody local is that we could do it in person, you know, and have that intimacy and that sound, that audio intimacy. But obviously the pro of having somebody outside is that we open up more territory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, both of those are possible. I think the latter is a little bit more realistic. I don't know. I could be wrong, but it feels like it would be hard to find somebody locally who would, you know, without opening it up to, you know, a much wider potential reach. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So do you have any, all that said, I mean, no, and answer your other question, no, I don't have anybody who's a real serious contender just at this moment, but I am asking everybody that I'm talking to for this series of exchanges if they have any suggestions. And if you don't, you can certainly think on it and come up with suggestions, but maybe you have somebody already off the top of your head.
Sure. I mean, when you told me you were thinking about doing this, I know a couple of people regionally that might be interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nobody you want to put out there now to the universe, as it were.
Well, let's see. Paul Brown is one of the first names that comes to mind. He is currently the director and gallerist for Institute 193, which is based out of Lexington, Kentucky. They also have a location in New York, I think Bushwick, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
So he manages that. They show specifically Southern artists at the Lexington location. He also just recently received a pretty substantial arts writing grant for coverage of the South. So he's going to be traveling a lot the next coming months, speaking to artists throughout the Southern region of the United States and discussing, you know, their approach and experience as artists and creative people. So that might be an interesting perspective. And he's very casual and friendly. He's funny. He's a good persona. Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting.
That's the first person that comes to mind for me.
Yeah. That's definitely an interesting out of the box proposal. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And, but we should say now that since you mentioned, that he's working out of Kentucky as well as this gallery in New York, we should mention that you're in Kentucky, right? Because you're getting your MFA in Louisville, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But you're not Southern yourself, correct?
I'm from Louisville, but I went and got my undergrad in Cincinnati in the Midwest, and then I kind of like hopped around there a little bit. So I wouldn't identify myself as a Southern artist, whatever that particularly means. I don't think regionalism is really appropriate for me, but I am located here, yes.
Yeah, got it. How would you describe the Louisville art community / scene to people who aren't familiar with it? Is there anything that would surprise people?
It's very large and it's very strong. So there are a few benefits to being in Louisville specifically. It's a smallish, mid-sized city. There's a large community of creatives, but it's not so large that it's hyper-competitive. In fact, it's incredibly encouraging supportive and friendly and collaborative and like all of these really great things. It's also very inexpensive to live here. The cost of living is super low.
Right.
And so it's easy to travel. You can own a home here for $60,000.
Wow.
In addition, we do have a couple of large, we have the Great Meadows Foundation, which offers a lot of traveling grants. And they do a lot of financial support as well as acquisition for regional artists, which is fantastic. And so there's opportunity here.
Right.
And
it's reason enough to make you consider sticking around for a while.
I would if I wasn't considering going and getting my MA elsewhere. But yeah, definitely. Yeah. Otherwise, I would consider staying long term.
Right. Are you a homeowner or are you considering being one?
Yes, I do own a home here.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
So, because you were able to get in with very modest down payment and all that, presumably.
Yes. Yeah. I was fortunate and I had a decent paying job before exiting the field. And so I was able to save up a little bit of money for a down payment. And I mean, our mortgage payment is $425 a month for 2 bedroom, 2 baths. I mean,
wow.
You can't.
That's pretty amazing.
It's
difficult
to find property that cheap, you know.
Is it, though, correspondingly, though? I mean, you mentioned how cheap it is to live there. What about the general wages? Like, if you're not in academia, you know, what kind of money are you making?
I mean, it's definitely possible to make. There are a lot of job opportunities.
Okay.
If that is your question. I mean, it is an urban area. You have a wide swath of businesses.
Right.
And we have large enterprises that are located here, like Humana and Anthem.
Humana and what was the other one?
Anthem, like health
Anthem,
organizations that employ a lot of people. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's switch gears finally to the old news, Weislinks, as you and I call it. basically, I for people who don't know, I basically forward you these emails usually at the last minute, and then sorry about that, and then you go through them and pick out which ones you think would be the most appropriate to include. So my first question is, you know, what is that process like for you? You know, kind of sort of quickly skimming or perusing all of these clips, like in a couple hour go or whatever it is. What is that? What kind of effect is that? Would you say that has?
What kind of effect?
Yeah. What's your emotional response to it, if anything?
It depends on a lot of things. Predominantly, what else is going on when I have to look them over. But I think my sleeps are a great opportunity to quickly summate an industry at large.
Right.
In both, you know, these concrete sort of institutional ways, as well as these sort of humorous, satirical, sometimes more casual approaches. And that I find refreshing and helpful.
I mean, one of the things I'm thinking about is that the way you described where you are, it sounds like it's a very bustling art community, the way you described it. So to what extent does that community generally, or you in particular, look outside, as to some extent everybody does, right? I mean, unless you're actually in the middle of it, you know, and even still, if you're in the middle of it, you're still presumably looking at, you know, social media or these emails, you know, and finding out other things, you know, like there was this whole thing at Art Basel, you know, which we don't even need to talk about. And that became like a little, almost a meme for a couple of days, but you know what I mean? So
the banana.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think 10 years ago, I would say that there was a pretty big problem with the community remaining really insular. I think that there is a younger group of artists that are becoming more established in their careers here, taking jobs as curators, developing their own projects, that sort of thing. And they're altering the conversation a little bit. And obviously, considering their age, they are more influenced by that of social media and digital news consumption, for example. And I feel like that particular culture is keenly aware of what is going on outside of Louisville, though I don't think they include it in their experience as much as, you know, I would like to see. For example, we don't show a ton of artists that aren't from here in local galleries, which I think is problematic. I think it comes from a good place, and that they're wanting to support everyone that's here.
Right.
But not bringing anyone new in, you're isolating yourself, as well as it feels kind of like protectionist and isolationist, and, you know, so.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about that.
Right. That's interesting. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for helping out and for reading through those, and great to talk to you, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, absolutely. You as well, and Happy New Year.
Many thanks again to all of these contributors. I also want to thank producer Liz Flynn and social media guru Liliana Karadavukian, who both helped with the show. We can include them in a future episode. If you have ideas for the co-host slot, please definitely reach out to us. Let us know who you think would make a good fit and maybe what your reasoning is. Many thanks in advance for doing so. And again, please consider supporting the show financially via theconversationpod.com/support, especially if you haven't already. I love seeing the names of new supporters come in. It means a ton and really does help this show keep going. Spreading the word about the show, leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts and elsewhere, and following on social media at Artist Podcast is also greatly appreciated. And if you're interested in checking out my work, my artwork, that is, please follow me at Michael Shaw Art. I'm trying to wean myself from showing my art on the podcast account and move it over to the exclusive art feed. So would love to see you over on that feed. Thank you very much again for listening. Happy 2020, my favorite candidate and saying this year, hindsight 2020. And I will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Until then, ciao for now.